This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me this week is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And we also have Stephen Lockeridge.
Hello, everyone.
And Will Bentley.
Hello, everyone.
Yay. So we've got the four Musketeer critics around Skype this evening. And in this week's episode, we will be covering two feature reviews. We have Alien Outbreak for you, by American Fighter. Our short shot is going to be Trace, and we're going to round up with a bit of Dolph Lundgren in our DTV throwback, Silent Trigger. So without further ado, let's crack on. Our first review then is Alien Outbreak. In this one, Zoe is a Canadian police officer transferred to Scotland, where she and her fellow officers encounter an invasion of alien robots, seemingly intent on killing everyone they come into contact with. Okay, guys, so this is a sort of pretty low-budget British sci-fi thriller, but it does have some very striking visual effects, which we'll get into. But this reminded me of another film, Rich, that we covered a while back called Alien Invasion, in that it sets up the usual sort of attitudes about, you know, being invaded and that, and then sort of turns it on its head later on. We're not going to go into too many details about what that is, but let's get your thoughts first, Rich.
Yeah, it was Invasion Planet Earth, I think, was the film you're referring to.
Oh. Rich?
Yeah, I think Invasion Planet Earth was the film you were referring to.
Yes, it was.
Yes. Yeah, I felt the same way. It does definitely have a sort of a similar feel to it, to a certain extent. This is much more of a darker tale. Of course, crosses over sort of the science fiction into horror sort of lines quite a lot. This film did surprise me. I thought the visual effects were a bit like in Invasion Planet Earth. Some of the visual effects I thought worked really nicely. I think in this one, probably some of them are even better, especially the kill scenes or suicide scenes, whether that was done with visual effects or practical effects or combination of the two. That all worked really nicely. The plot is a bit, I don't think there's enough story to sort of engage you for the whole running time. And I've had a few issues with some of the characters. But overall, I thought it was quite interesting to see a film like this from Devon, somewhere around there, I think Exeter way. So like a rural, atmospheric sort of, the kind of, we see a lot of low-budget sort of village-based or rural horror movies, but not a lot of science fiction-y kind of tales like this one.
I must admit, I thought this was set sort of in the wilds of Scotland. But basically we're talking about sort of a very rural setting, aren't we? You know, sort of not many houses or even, you know, sort of villages. It's sort of very sort of scarcely populated area.
Yes, very scarcely populated. You can liken it to some of those sort of sci-fi horror films set in deserts, you know, like that you see quite a lot of from America.
That's true, yeah. Over to Will, what do you think of this one?
I actually really enjoyed it. I mean, I'd concur with Richard's comments on it. I actually thought it was West Country, funnily enough. But the accents that the sort of character actors that pop up are coming up with, I thought sounded more kind of West Country. I really enjoyed the feel of it. I thought it was really well done. And it actually, wherever it was, it made really good use of the actually quite desolate landscape. You know, it wasn't the Shire, was it?
No.
Heading a bit more towards Mordor, actually, in parts. But, you know, it was, I liked it, and I liked the anonymity of it, that you weren't actually 100% sure where. It was just supposed to be every English small village, wasn't it, I think, really? The effects were, considering that they clearly were operating, you know, there was obviously a lot of CGI, and you know, I think there was no getting away from the fact it was, but it was just smoothly done. They put a huge amount of effort in, and I think it worked. It had a lot of heart, this film, actually. It punched quite well above its weight.
Steve, over to you. What do you think?
I'm going to be the miserable one. I really didn't like it, to be fair. For the direction and the effects were great for what they had, but I just thought the acting was terrible, especially the lead.
Catherine Drake.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I've seen more urgency in a maggot trying to crawl down the street. You know, they're supposed to be running away from aliens, and she's dawdling.
Yeah. But this was one of the problems I had with it, because she's encountering people killing themselves and, you know, and bodies on the road and stuff, and she just doesn't really react at all, even when someone kills themselves right in front of her. So that made me think, oh, maybe there's something weird going on with her character, you know, like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers kind of thing. But nothing really develops in that way to sort of pay that off. So you just end up left feeling that she's either really cold or just acting badly. I couldn't decide which was which.
She didn't give a donkeys.
Yeah, at first I thought they were going to, like, you know, throw back to she left Canada because she was traumatised by finding bodies or something like that, and it was a way of dealing with it or something. Anything just to give her that, but no, just terrible.
They upped the ante. They actually had one guy kill himself twice in the Land Rover.
Yeah.
And another thing, why did she have to be Canadian?
Well, we know why, don't we, really?
Do you think it's international sales? Yeah, maybe. I mean, that might have helped in the trailer or something. That was pretty much the only thing I could think of was the reason for that. And I don't think that is beneficial to the film at the end of the day, but it might help with international sales.
I'd say the direction, the effects, everything were fine. It was just performances. Even the script was quite good. It was a bit vague at the end. I know we're not going to get into that. And there was one other thing that really threw me off was the suicide of the older gentleman, shall we say.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Death. I'm going to say it because it's people will not believe me until they see it. Death by toilet roll.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, seriously? Every other thing I can see. But the effects, I thought the design of the effects were great, especially the larger.
Yes, exactly.
I would say. I thought they were really, really impressively done.
I didn't like it when you saw one of them's face close up, though.
That was slightly ropey. Slightly, but fair do some. I thought the direction was well, and the effects were great.
Yeah.
Even the script was quite good. It was just their performers let the whole thing down. Mm. But having said that, I don't think it was just her as well, even like the older woman at the beginning.
You know, from an acting point of view, I think they're punching above their weight, aren't they? But not quite succeeding. You know, being given these sort of like meaty sort of monologues to deal with before, you know, offering themselves doesn't quite work. Unfortunately, you know, trying to deal out this sort of a little bit of plot exposition to sort of you know, get us hooked in. It unfortunately doesn't quite work, but what does work, as everyone's kind of said, is these you know, the sort of monolithic sort of design of the aliens, you know, having them on such a grander scale than what we would consider like human size, just give it an even more sort of alien idea, you know, and sort of feeling that yes, this is something from off this world. Which I thought really helped, and you know, kudos to these guys for delivering something which, let's face it, we hadn't seen before, which I thought was really cool.
The director of this, Neil Rowe, previously did a film called Robot World. Have any of you come across that one?
I don't think so.
No.
I was gonna try and give it a watch because it's on Amazon Prime, but I would still be interested to check it out because he's clearly a filmmaker who's, you know, trying hard with the limited resources that he's got to yeah. deliver something a bit different, like the guy who made Invasion Planet Earth. So it's another. I mean, the cover is kind of really the poster art. The cover art is very generic. I mean, I'm sure it's going to attract some interest, but like a lot of these things, it looks like a million other things, and it's probably not really going to capture anyone's particular attention. But I think if people, you know, discover this, or you know, go looking for a micro budget film that's, you know, trying to do something a bit above and beyond, I think they'll be pleasantly surprised.
Absolutely. Okay, scores on the doors, guys. I'm going to give this one a 6 out of 10. Will?
I'd go for a 7 just because they really, really... I mean, yeah, the acting wasn't Oscar-worthy, but the directing was just more than competent. The effects were great. I think they deserve a 7 for just the sheer amount of slickness they put into the CGI and the creature effects.
Mm-hmm. Steve?
5. I think... I really couldn't get past the acting, and like I said, they did well with what they had, but yeah, it let me down.
Interesting.
And I'm going to go for a 6 out of 10, same as you, Mike.
Cool, so 5, 2 sixes and a 7 for Alien Outbreak. Our next review is American Fighter. Following the Iranian Revolution and rise to power by Ayatollah Khomeini, young Ali Jahani is sent to the United States by his parents for a better, safer life and manages to go to college on a wrestling scholarship. When he discovers that his mother is ill, Ali is desperate to raise money to help her come to America, and his best friend Ryan introduces him to the shady world of underground fighting and its main promoter McKellen. Okay, so it's kind of interesting that this is called American Fighter when it's dealing with an Iranian immigrant. But there we go. Couple of things that is not mentioned anywhere with this film is the fact that it's actually a sequel to a film called American Wrestler, The Wizard, which deals with Ali's time in high school. Which from what I understand, is sort of a much more sort of typical, you know, sort of class struggle kind of drama, whereas this is very much a... The film this reminded me most of, guys, was Gladiator, the one with Cuba Gooding Jr.
Oh, the James Marshall.
James Marshall.
Yeah.
And Brian Dennehy. It's got that sort of feel to it. And
for me, it was never back down.
Yeah, it's got, you know, that as well, I guess, because of the MMA angle. It's set in, what, 1988, I believe this is?
81.
So we get the same track played a couple of times. Jesse's Girl by, remind me who did that, Rick? Rick Springfield.
Rick Springfield.
So they managed to use that a couple of times. I didn't mind this. It was a bit weird to begin with because I thought all the dialogue was going to be dubbed in post. It took a while before you actually sort of see any sort of lip syncing going on. But you know, once you get to the actual fighting stuff, I thought this film picked up quite a bit. Rich, what do you reckon?
Yeah, like you, I was surprised to discover that it was a sequel. The first film, American Wrestler, The Wizard, was a fictionalized biopic of its producer, Ali Afshar, who the main character is based on. But this film is continuing that character, and it says based on a true story. But as far as I can tell, it's nothing to do with what actually happened to this Ali Afshar guy. It's kind of the wrestling bit and the fact that he came from Iran. I'm not sure about the rescuing his mother angle. That might have been part of the true story element. But they've really dramatised it and taken it much more down a kind of Karate Kid route. But I thought it was really, you know, very polished. I look up this Ali Afshar guy and his ESX production company. You know, they're putting out a whole lot of films, most of which are turning up on Netflix, lots of them being about like dirt bike race or dirt track racing and stuff.
Yes, I've seen them advertised. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's one with like Kevin Dillon called Dirt and a few others, but they don't make that, but they make tons of stuff anyway. He's an entrepreneur and he's had a huge amount of success, started this company and stuff, and they're making tons of films. And on the basis of this one, you know, I'd definitely be willing to give others a go. I think the choreography on the fight scenes is done really well. The casting's really good. This is one of the few films I've ever seen where I actually really liked Sean Patrick Flannery.
He's really good in this.
Yeah, I generally don't get on with him at all.
He was fantastic. Mm. He was the best thing by a country mile about this film. And I didn't realise it was him until...
It shows you how we're all getting old, Steve, is what it is.
Oh, yeah, I know.
He's not young Indiana Jones anymore.
But the grizzled... His grizzled look really suits him, though, now.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Also, we've got Tommy Flanagan, who plays McKellen. I thought he was really good in this as well. You can kind of see his setup from a mile off, can't you? You know, what he's planning to do. But even so, it's a sort of underhanded thing that he does to our hero. Yeah, and I must admit, I really like this. I liked it more once Sean Patrick Flannery came into it as the doc/coach character. He really helped lift this.
And they build his character up as the story progresses, and he's kind of warning. Is his name Ali in this?
Yeah,
and he's kind of warning him. You know, this isn't going to go the way you think it's going to, and stuff. And then. When things do go sideways, you know, he becomes the mentor and we get the whole... well, I'll tell you, the film it kind of reminded me of was Undisputed 2, where Michael Jai White's character is a boxer, but then he has to learn a new discipline. He has to learn the sort of martial arts and mixed martial arts at that to take on Boyka. And it's kind of the same in this movie because he's a wrestler who's using his wrestling moves, and Flannery's like, no, that's just, well, and his mate, actually, they're like, that's not going to cut it. You've got to, you know, branch out and do some other stuff. So his friend, who teaches him some moves, and, you know, he has kind of a Rocky IV kind of fate, a little bit, not entirely, but, you know, that kind of thing. It's the whole friend gets hurt, so he gets angry kind of thing. But it's more like Undisputed 2, where he's just got to build himself up to fight back and, you know, have that... final confrontation with the guy. The one he's up against is, you know, forgettable. You know, I couldn't tell you what his character name was or anything, but the fights themselves I thought were really done, and I like the montages because they're important for a movie like this.
Yeah, there's one interesting element. You mentioned Never Back Down earlier, and there's one, you know, sort of plot avenue I thought it was going to go down. You know, he has this sort of antagonistic relationship with one of the other wrestlers on his team.
Yeah.
At college, you know, and they get in a bit of a tussle over something. I was half expecting that guy to turn up in the underground circuit as well.
Yeah, me too, yeah. I actually thought he did for a moment, and then I was like, no, that's not him, is it?
Which is a bit weird. But I did like the whole thing. You know, it's a bit like the Karate Kid, you know, with the crane kick sort of thing. And he keeps practicing this kick, and Sean Patrick sort of turns around and goes, you know, he's going to see it a mile off. But, you know, the only way that's going to work is if he's not looking.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, he's not looking. It's a great little moment. Yeah. So this was, it was, you know, we had a bunch of screeners through from, Signature Entertainment, and this is one of them. And I must admit, it was one of the ones I was least looking forward to because the title and the cover just looked so generic.
Mm.
And I thought, here we go again. You know, and stuff about MMA usually turns me off, even though I'm a big martial arts fan. But I don't want to see two guys just sort of hugging each other around the floor, you know what I mean? So I was actually really pleasantly surprised by this.
It's also a bit unusual to see an MMA tale taking place in the early 80s.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if that's, you know, artistic license or whether there was any kind of basis for, you know, that was really that mixed martial arts was happening around that time. But it's all dramatic license, I think, at the end of the day.
Well, that's right.
Another thing I wanted to check with you, what did you think about the long-running Star Wars joke that they just kept coming back to time and time again?
I thought that was actually quite good, actually. His best mate's a bit of a fan, isn't it? You know, Empire Strikes Back had just come out and he kept doing his Yoda impression. I thought that was quite endearing, actually.
Did you stick around for the payoff in the end credits?
Of course not. You know me. Yeah. Once the credits roll, I tend to sort of, well, that's the end of the film. Why should I hang around to watch all the credits? Was there anything worth watching, Rich?
It's just a joke. It's just another joke about Star Wars, really, at the end. But I'm not going to spoil. I don't want to say it because for people to watch it.
So there you go, folks. There's another Star Wars joke in or at the end of the credits.
What are you going to score it, Mike?
I'm going to give this one 87 out of 10.
Steve?
Yeah, I'll probably go 7. Yeah. I mean, it rips off every single 80s trope going. But it does it in a quite fresh and enjoyable way, to be fair.
I'd find The Karate Kid much more palatable if they got rid of Ralph Macchio and put this guy in. This is an actor called George Costuras, and he's pretty decent in this. He's got a good physical presence.
He's got the innocence bit down right, the naivety. It works well for him, I think, you know.
But he's also got the physique and the moves as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah. I'm going for a 7 as well. I didn't know if I said that, but yeah, 7's all round.
Right, 7's all round for American Fighter. Our short shot this week is Trace. The relationship between a martial arts master and his AI protege is put to the test during an audition for a potential buyer. Okay, so Rich, we've all seen this one, I'll take it, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Me and Rich kind of sort of see a lot of these, you know, there's a lot of sort of dystopian future, you know, sort of shorts coming out all the time. And here we go with another one. But this has got an interesting look to it. It's got a decent bit of choreography in the middle. And I must admit, the acting was actually sort of pretty good between the AI and sort of, you know, the main character. So I was actually quite on board with this. Steve, what do you reckon?
Yeah, it was okay. I thought it was shot really well.
There's Steve. I don't know if anyone else is picking that up.
Yeah, I can't hear him, man.
Hello?
Better.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm off now. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. It was quite good. It kind of reminded me of like a cross between Cube and Ex Machina in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the style of it, especially at the beginning, and then, you know, coming back into the room. And yeah, it was okay. The choreography was really good as well. But I like the cocky tech guy. You know, he's created the AI and thinks he's the dog's bollocks, and I hate him like that, but he played it well, you know.
Mm. It's it was interesting that, you know, the way that he picks up on the fact that, you know, this AI can laugh, you know, I didn't ask you to program that, you know, we never programmed that, what's going on. I quite like that sort of little element. So very Westworld, you know. Will, what do you reckon of this one?
I'd totally go along with that description of the tech startup guy, like the guy who owns the company, was just an arrogant, sort of quite nauseating, god complex kind of character. Yeah, I mean, it was a really simple one, kind of one location. Well, that's not true, actually, no, because there was... Yeah, I won't go down that road with the locations. I thought that they did what they did with that room really well. And I think there was a lot of, like, good acting using the space. The choreography was the main part of it. I mean, I didn't want to be sort of cynical and say it was like an extended kind of, this is what we can do in terms of fight choreography, but there was an inordinate amount of time spent doing that. Mm-hmm. When, you know, what the story was about was, I mean, it was quite sort of kind of multi-layered. I mean, like the female character that comes in, the customer, mm-hmm. you know, there was, I mean, the sort of the reasons why they were kind of, why the guy was inventing and selling these AIs were sort of, you know, they were hinted at quite a kind of dystopian world.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, there's quite a lot of interesting. There was a lot of interesting mileage in. Well, you know, what is this? What are you doing? Why, you know, why is it possible to buy these? You know, what's the kind of end point? But it was kind of focusing on the micro of, you know, it, I mean, actually, this film, with something so short, shoehorned a lot into it. You know, because you have that sort of, is it alive? Is it real? Does it learn? You know, does it have a conscience? Is it right to treat it in the way that the rather smug Git who invented it treats things, you know, and it did what a sci-fi short should do, which was it was thought-provoking, and it had some pretty nifty, you know, fighting going on in it. I mean, it was slick as well, and because it was so compressed, the difference in the kind of acting and, you know, the tightness of the script between that and the first film we discussed tonight was just so stark. I mean, it, you know, I'd say it was well paced in terms of like people's delivery. It was slick. It was economical and well scripted, and it was fun to watch.
Rich, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I really like this one. It's got the great action. It's got the high sort of production values. I'd say a lot of story in it. It's only 8 minutes long. The set is the main location in the film is like this big sort of low ceiling warehouse space, which I just couldn't help but thinking of Bruce Wayne's place in the Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah.
Where he drives, where he's having all his conversations with Alfred, because the Batcave's, you know, been blown up in the previous film or whatever. So I just kept thinking, is it the same place? Because it looks really similar to it. Might not be. Made by a team called Wong Fu Productions. They've got quite a lot of other stuff on YouTube where this was found. But they mainly focus on sort of like light, sort of romantic comedy-ish kind of stuff and dramas. So this is kind of a change of pace for them. But I'm hoping they do more because they've worked with, did some great work with the choreographer. I can't remember what his name is, Noah something. And yeah, all the performances are really good. And I highly recommend it.
Now, we don't score the shorts, but I just have one question for you guys. Is can you envisage this sort of 8 minute story being blown up into a 90 minute film?
Maybe, but I think you'd be just like ripping off martial arts films and sticking Ex Machina exposition on it. That's what I really think it would be if you expanded it, and I don't know if it would work.
Yeah, I think it's all been done before, so therefore doing it as kind of a little short story is probably the best way to do it. Otherwise you're going to end up crossing over with, you know, a million other films that have come across. The fact that this is such a succinct piece of storytelling is what actually makes it stand out.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with you. Okay, so, as usual, we'll put a link to the short in the footnotes when we publish the episode. Do check it out. It's a great little piece of work, 8 minutes long. Watch it in your lunch hour. Check it out. Our D2B throwback this week is Silent Trigger. After a disastrous mission in the Balkans, a covert ops sniper is reunited with his female spotter for a new mission in the US. On a dark and stormy night, the pair set up for a dawn assassination from the top of a partially built tower block have a perfect kill shot. However, they will have to deal with a psychotic security guard, each other's distrust, and their own agency in order to survive. Okay, so this really piqued my interest. This is, I must admit, my knowledge of Dolph Lundgren's films isn't great, especially the ones in the 90s. So I was really happy to see that this was directed by Russell Mulcahy and starring, or co-starring, Gina Bellman from Leverage. So really good role for her in this. Yeah, set over one night with flashbacks to this sort of previous mission as well. Yeah, this was an interesting little film, this one. Rich, over to you.
This is probably most well known for having cover art that doesn't really very well represent the film, because
it looks very much like the Universal Soldiers kind of setup, yeah. Isn't it? That seems to be what they're trying to riff off.
Yeah, it's got a very good cover, a very good poster with Dolph Lundgren holding the biggest gun in the world, but the actual film itself is a lot more sort of art house drama-y kind of thing. The reason this has come up is our friend Tom Jolliffe has written a piece on this recently for the Flickering Myth website, so I thought, well, it might be worth sort of revisiting it, and it was definitely worth having a go. The last time I saw it was on a VHS cassette in pan and scan, and the version that was on is on Amazon Prime is in full widescreen, so that was really nice. That it's, you certainly get a lot more out of it when you can see what Russell Mulcahy does with the whole frame. And a lot of it was because it's very much set in one location in the building, and a lot of the cases in the top of the building, it's just like one big set. And it really reminded me of some of the work in Highlander 2, which I know, that gets a lot of flack, that film, but that kind of, it's set in the bits that take place in the future where it's all just permanently dark, and, he's brooding around in the buildings, and the bad weather's outside and stuff. So it's the same in this. It's got that sympathetic weather of like the rainstorm outside gathering. But then they kind of, so to put it in perspective, the two main characters, they're together at the beginning, then they separate, and then they reunite, and so they're sort of revisiting. It's sort of like the history repeating itself kind of thing happening. And it could be very quiet and uneventful, but what they've done is they've added in, whether at the producer's intent or whoever, they've added in some extra action elements. But if it wasn't for the psychotic or the drug-addled or whatever security guard kind of instigating some action sequences, really nothing would happen until the end. And I think that's what a lot of people had a problem with.
Yeah.
Well, how about you, Steve? Did you get on with this one?
The thing that really annoyed me was the drug addled security guard. I'm sorry, but why? I just didn't get it. I mean, like you're saying there, Richie, it could be just to give him something to do.
Yeah.
But he's just so over the top. There's no. I didn't get it. It wound me up. I was, So he goes up there to rape the woman out of nowhere because he's had two lines of coke and then sees spiders crawling over his body.
Lightweight.
then Dolph stops him from raping. She gets a bit of a kick in. Dolph stops the rape. Then next minute, shags her. And it's just like, hang on a minute. Where's this come from? It lost me at that point, I'll be honest, and that was quite early in. That's about half an hour in, you've still got another hour. And then it just descends into the chaos that comes out of nowhere. And then the slight twist at the end as well.
Mm.
With the other security guard, shall we say, it was just, again, out of nowhere. It's like they're making up as they went along. It's like, right, we'll just stick this in now.
No, I wasn't impressed at all. I thought Dolph was great. I thought Gina Bellman was great.
And that was about it.
It is kind of weird how much trouble this one security guard produces for these two supposedly seasoned covert ops operatives. Yeah. You know, really, he should have killed him the first chance he had, instead of just sort of chaining him to the toilet seat or whatever he does. You know, I thought that was ridiculous.
And also, but the thing is, his behaviour. I mean, he's been doing this job for quite a while, and he's been entertaining himself with his narcotics and whatever for a while. So is he really that far gone that he's basically throwing his entire life away for what he's doing that night? I mean, he seems to go too far.
Yeah, exactly.
There's not a lot of logic to it.
No. The thing that really threw me was the tattoos of the spiders, because they were luminescent.
Yeah,
he had these luminescent tattoos of spiders all over his body, and I was like, what the fuck is now happening? You know, I thought, has this suddenly become a sci-fi movie or something, you know, where he's got these sort of spiders sort of like crawling all over him, you know, gonna sort of send them after them or something. That was bizarre.
Well, I would...
there were times with the you know, because of the thunder and lightning and stuff, and this guy sort of stalking them, I was wondering if the script may be originally like a horror movie or something, you know, some sort of slasher movie, which had been retooled as a sort of spy movie.
I think it was probably more likely, because I think the original script was the original script was called The Algonquin Goodbye, and I think it was probably much more of a two-hander than it actually ended up being. Yeah. I mean, it is very much a two-hander, but it didn't have I'm expecting that it didn't have this extra action element that was thrown in. I mean, the action that takes place by virtue of the security guard character is really good, I thought. I mean, all the elevator lift shaft stuff and that, I really like that. And when stuff goes down at the end, you know, all the the big action sequence to take place, again, they've probably overblown it for the sake of a big finale rather than that being potentially what was originally intended. I don't know, but it does go big action at the last part, and I thought, you know, they're making good use of the space, there's lots of stuff going on, so I did enjoy that. The whole film, have you ever seen a film called Automatic with Olivia Gruner?
Yeah, I think so. Was that Albert Pyun?
It wasn't Albert Pyun. Sorry?
Sorry, I'm saying it rings a bell.
It was Olivia Gruner and Daphne Ashbrook, and it was made around the same time, but it was another film set in a building, and it's basically he's an android and he's got to protect this character, from a predatory attack, which is similar to what kind of happens in here. But we've also got other elements of, you know, this film also feels a bit like Die Hard, feels a bit like, to a certain extent, Death Machine, again, sort of made around the same time. So they've all got this low-budget aesthetic, you know, some sort of quite striking visuals and stuff on probably a low budget. What I didn't kind of get on with so much, well, not get on with, but you know, in the flashback sort of scene at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're doing, they're there to do the hit. He decides not to do the hit. And all of a sudden they're being a bit like at the end, so I don't want to spoil it, but then all of a sudden they're attacked by this massive helicopter sort of comes out of nowhere. And I'm thinking, was that people who've discovered them, or is that their own people who are trying to kill him because of him failing to pull the trigger? And I didn't.
I got the impression in that case it was a case of them being discovered, but who knows?
Yeah, because the. Go on, Steve.
That's what I mean. It's just a bit vague. It's all a bit vague. And
yeah, the working for
is
one
that intentional or?
They're working for one of these sort of very paranoid, very cynical, and very sort of self-destructive sort of covert operation, you know, covert agencies, you know, which is, oh, you know, sort of failure is not an option. We, you know, you will die if you don't do your mission sort of thing. And so, well, you're going to get through quite a few agents. Yeah, your recruitment campaign must be really good. Yeah, which is a bit silly. But there you go. Okay, we don't score the silent. We don't score the DTV throwbacks as usual, but this is on Amazon Prime at the moment, and as Rich said, it's in a nice widescreen print. And if you you know, that way inclined, we think you should check it out or not, according to Steve.
Can I just mention one more thing before we go? The soundtrack. It's got a really unusual soundtrack.
Yes, it does.
What did you think about it?
Stefano Mainetti is the guy who did the score for this. And I thought it was really good. It was very distinctive. You know, it did give it a sort of bit more sort of sweeping scope to it.
And do I remember correctly, it's kind of like kettle drum kind of thing? A bit like Eric Serra's kind of work on like GoldenEye, stuff like that?
Yeah. Yeah, but had a really good sort of...
an ambient, kind of ambient kind of music, kind of trippy kind of sound. It's quite unusual. I mean, it sort of kicks off. Certainly gives you an unusual feel to the film. I think there's actually one big dialogue scene that takes place. I think it's before the love scene. There's this really long dialogue scene between the two of them, and there's this really prominent sort of, not dance music, but, you know, it's sort of rhythmic music in the background. And I was thinking that is really changing the feel of this scene. It's like quite self-conscious. I think if they'd have pulled back, if they didn't have that music, it would feel completely differently. So I thought that was quite, you know, unusual. I'm not sure if I liked it or not. I think it might have worked better with a more subtle score myself.
Oh yeah, I enjoyed it. So that is Silent Trigger on Amazon Prime. Check it out. And that's the end of this week's episode. So thank you for listening. Thank you to Rich and Steve and Will for joining me this week.
No problem.
No problem.
Awesome. No problem. We had a few issues with Skype tonight, so we managed to get there at the end. Yes, so thanks again, guys. Thank you for listening. Tune in again next time.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.